Hello, it's Lee Durrant here. Welcome to Rodcast, the podcast where we get to meet and chat with some truly fantastic people from within the Salesforce ecosystem. My goal for this podcast is to help and inform people who either already perhaps work in the Salesforce ecosystem, or maybe you're thinking of breaking into it, to understand what's good about it, what could be better, where there are opportunities, and what some of the most amazing people in this space, how they got into it, where their career took them, and what their plans are for the future. Hope you enjoy it, and please help me to reach as many people as possible within Salesforce by leaving some comments and sharing. All feedback welcome. So yeah, hope you enjoy. So joining me today is Gemma Emmett, who is a bit of a Salesforce legend, and correct me, Gemma, if I'm wrong, an MVP now as well?
Yes, yeah, recently minted.
Minted? Nice.
What's the term that people use?
Oh, right. I didn't realize. Okay. So, yeah, thanks for joining me on the first one of these. So that's very kind of you to go gentle on me. I want to just have a chat about the 10 or 11 years, I think, now that you've been working in Salesforce and the journey you've been on, which I think is pretty crazy, having had a look at your background in terms of the kind of companies you've worked for and how you started and where you are now, so that we can share that with people and people that are out there that are thinking of maybe getting into Salesforce, how to do it, and follow someone like yourself, really. So remind me, is it 11 years?
It is 11 years, and I think actually I remember you guys were one of the first firms of recruiters that I actually got in touch with, just as I was finishing off being an administrator and moving into consultancy. So we've been speaking constantly over that 10-year period, and it's just incredible to see how that market has grown for the recruiter firms as well. It's just been incredible.
Yeah, your story is unique, yet not. There are other people on similar trajectories. If you think 11 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, was your first exposure to Salesforce, was that at Dun & Bradstreet, or did you do it before that?
It was at Dun & Bradstreet, yeah. It's quite funny, actually, because my background was always data analysis. So I was working on spreadsheets and pulling reports, and I made a mutual decision with a previous employer to leave and look for a job. And they said, you're going to be in sales ops, and we're early adopters of this thing called Salesforce. So, yeah. And I thought, oh, great, another place I can pull reports from. Great. And then I started to understand fairly quickly that I wouldn't have to be pulling reports and putting them all into spreadsheets, that it was all online, and that my job was so much more than pulling data and analyzing results now. It was more supporting people with the tool. And the role kind of evolved because I was pulling data and helping to keep people, helping to keep the sales pipeline as accurate as it could be by supporting people. And then for me, I realized I really enjoyed doing that. And I really enjoyed looking after Salesforce. And I really liked the idea that it was online and that you didn't have to install it on any computers or anything like that. And that's how it started. And as I started to learn it, Dun & Bradstreet were prepared to invest in me going on courses and doing the certifications, which were quite new back then. I think it was 2008.
And was it? God, they were called something completely different then, weren't they? I mean, I think the administrator has always been the administrator, but yeah. The way that that's evolved has been crazy over the 11 years.
Yeah, and now we're looking at 25 plus certifications. In fact, then we were probably looking at about 5.
Yeah,
and just the strength of this platform has actually enabled people like myself and my colleagues who've been doing this 10 years to grow our careers in the same way, not just through experience and videos, because back then we didn't have Trailhead. We learned through bitter experience, and we learned through delivering training ourselves to people. I mean, back in the day, we'd have to train people yourselves. And we learned from documentation and videos, and now you can actually get hands-on with it on Trailhead. So it's a really interesting, it's a very different way of building your career on Salesforce now that you have Trailhead.
And do you, again, I think a lot of people might be in the same boat here. Although you did go to uni and do a degree, didn't you? So was that, was it your plan to,
obviously the data analysis stuff you were doing, was that always the plan to get to do that? So something in sort of IT?
While I was at university, I had friends who had full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And being a student was fun, but I think I'd got to the point where I wanted to get out of, break out of academia and come into the big wide world and make my own money and look after myself a bit, because I'm quite an independent person. So that was the decision not to continue with things like masters or anything like that. But I did do a technology degree. I was one of about five or six women who graduated from my class in 2005, which frighteningly enough is like nearly 20 years ago. So that first, the first roles that I had were in statistics. I worked for an exam board and I worked for a fire service and I was pulling data, and that helped me to get to understand in context a lot of the concepts about databases that I'd learned at university, but I never expected to fall into something like this. And now I feel like I'm kind of set for life. It's not something I ever want to get out of doing. I'm very happy doing Salesforce.
And it's funny because a lot of people I know, like yourself, have known for as long as 11 years now. They never, back then, people didn't necessarily deliberately get into Salesforce, much like in my industry, no one really wants to get into recruitment, but you end up doing it. But now people are deliberately trying to get into Salesforce. So maybe there will be some people from that period that knew what they were doing, but there seems to be a lot of stories of people that kind of fell into it and are now in that sort of legendary status that you're in, which is great.
The accidental admin.
Oh, is it? Yeah, accidental architect now, isn't it? Surely that's the title.
Yeah, it's now. Yeah. Changed. So
the journey then from you to Dun & Bradstreet was first, then I believe you moved to Access Point, didn't you, which if I remember rightly was a still are perhaps a small consulting company.
I actually accepted a role with an end user. It was an insurance company, and I was all ready to go. I'd signed the paperwork and everything. And then I was encouraged to have a chat with somebody about a customer facing role instead. And I was, up until that point, I'd never been customer facing other than, you know, part-time jobs while I was at uni and things like that. So I was a bit nervous, and I had my job interview in the Holiday Inn at Handy Cross in High Wycombe, and thought, why am I having a job interview in a hotel? But the guy was really friendly and explained what the role would be. And he said you'd actually be going in and out of different companies and helping them to implement Salesforce. So you get quite a variety. And it was really appealing, so I decided to go for it. I decided to take that job instead, and I was there for a good year or so, just getting my feet on the ground in the consultancy world, before starting to enjoy that, realised that was what I wanted to do, and then moved into another role where I was able to work on bigger implementations or corporate implementations, and my first foray into enterprise level implementations as well. So that happened over the course of a few years afterwards.
When you look at your profile now, and tell me if I'm being a bit harsh here, but it kind of looks like you planned this perfectly, and there was always your plan to go from an end user to a small consultancy to a slightly bigger consultancy, and the plan all the way through to where you are now. Was it deliberate, or did it just kind of happen that way?
It kind of happened that way, because actually I wouldn't say that it was my career growth was necessarily aligned to Salesforce growth in its entirety, but there is an element of that, because Salesforce has been growing in popularity. I would say it's really in the last 5 years it started to go postal in the UK, where you've got a lot of enterprise deals being sold by Salesforce, and therefore a lot more outcry for experienced talent to go and implement those enterprise level projects, because Salesforce is selling them faster than we can produce resources to actually deliver them. But I would say in terms of that, I think I tended to think about what I wanted from each job.
Yeah.
And in the beginning it was, I want some experience, I want to do some projects. And then it became, oh, I want to do service cloud now, so I'll do some service cloud. And then it became, I'd like to do service cloud where it affects 250 plus people, because, you know, knowing that you've been part of designing something that makes them more productive and helps them enjoy their day better, you know, is really quite a motivator. So I started chasing the dopamine in some ways, because I worked out what motivated me. And eventually I even gravitated towards Financial Force and went there for 3.5 years to do ISV work, because I knew the application and I was really gaining a good understanding of the consultancy sector. So I really wanted to gain more experience in that. And with each successful project, that was something else that motivated me.
It was interesting because I was looking at, you tick, if you tick the boxes of what someone would want to do in Salesforce from the beginning through to where you are now, and there's obviously nowhere near the end, you've done the end user, you've done the small consultancy, you've done a slightly bigger consultancy, you've done contracting, and then you've gone to a huge consultancy, and then you've gone to an ISV. So that's you've tried everything at the moment, haven't you? Mm-hmm. I noticed no names mentioned necessarily, but the big one, you didn't really stay there hugely long. Did you find, was there a reason for that?
A lot of it was to do with the way that the market was at the time, because the market at the time for a big consultancy, the kinds of projects that you're going to want to work on need to be massive, and yeah. They need to be, Salesforce needs to be part of one small part of a much wider program in order for those projects to be profitable, especially when you've got hundreds of people working on those projects. And at the time, it could be argued that Salesforce wasn't really there yet in the UK in terms of those projects. Those projects, we did have those projects. We had huge projects going on. And at the time, it was during that key growth period where you've got a few really good enterprise customers and you're focusing on building the middle market up nicely so that you can then get enough stories behind you to then take it to really come up with a huge enterprise strategy. And but you need that growth and that establishment in the UK first. So I think that's where we were at the time. So a lot of us in Salesforce's market is very fast growing, and projects, and a key USP of Salesforce is you can be up and running quite quickly. So your projects don't last years necessarily. They might last months or they might last weeks. And back then, if we didn't have huge, multi-year programs of work coming through the door, then the larger firms, if you look at those pieces of work in comparison to other huge implementations, things like SAP and Oracle, those projects do take years. Salesforce doesn't take years. So from that perspective, it became fairly difficult to get work of that level. And a lot of us didn't want to, a lot of us wanted to keep working and keep implementing so that our skills were being increased all the time. And we were gaining a lot of the practical experience that we need. So I didn't stay there long because frankly, I just wanted to get out there and keep using my skills.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. You're obviously someone that likes to be at the cutting edge of stuff as well. Which is great in Salesforce, isn't it? Because they're always bringing some. I mean, I'm no technical person myself, but they're bringing new stuff out virtually every 6 months, aren't they? It's always like there's always something new and exciting coming up that you want to be at the bleeding edge of. Have I got that right, or is it every year?
Well, it can be hard to keep up sometimes. Salesforce make a lot of acquisitions, so their product base has grown from being sales, service, and a bit of platform, and some integrations and some coding, to now most of the stuff that you want to achieve in Salesforce, you don't need code to do. We've now got Commerce Cloud. We've now got industry-specific focused packages. We've got CPQ. There's so much to learn now, and I think. Now I am actually finding that I don't want to learn absolutely everything that Salesforce has to offer. What I want to achieve is mastery of the platform, but not to the extent where I know absolutely everything, because I don't think it is possible to know everything about there is to know about Salesforce.
You probably 10 years ago, you probably could have said, I know everything there is to know. I imagine at least.
That was a goal of mine, was to know pretty much everything about the platform. But the platform grows all the time, so you have to be kind of strategic now about what you want to learn and what you want to specialize in.
That's probably a decent tip for anybody thinking of anyone wanting to get into the world of Salesforce, or perhaps is in the world of Salesforce but is feeling like looking around. Is it a tip to say what part of it is your passion, what part of it gets you excited?
I actually get my enjoyment from Speaking with clients at a strategic level about what they want to achieve in Salesforce, and then transforming that into something that someone's using on a day-to-day basis. And if you have built the rule that is sending, that is automatically producing an email or an invoice, you know, just because of something that someone else has put in at the other end, you know, I actually, when that works, I've been known to dance around the room before now.
I understand that. I'm not a tech, like I say, I'm no techie, but in recruitment, you get the buzz of finding someone the right job. I mean, don't get me wrong, at the beginning of recruitment, when you're starting out in your career, it's all about trying to get the deal over the line. But as you get older and more experienced, it's about knowing you've made a really good match. Yeah. I can't imagine having that feel for some sort of something to do with technology, but I can appreciate if that's your thing, then brilliant. Actually, you know, Teresa, she's my yeah. wife and business partner, she builds our little Salesforce instance, and she gets that kind of weird kick when something she's worked on works, basically. So I can imagine that. It must be quite nice. What was it like at Financial Force? Because that's you spent, you know, that's the biggest chunk of the 11 years you've been doing it. That was the longest you stayed in one place, wasn't it? Well, apart from where you are now, I think. So what's it like to work at an ISV where you can, from the outside looking in, you're sort of going quite narrow, aren't you, with what you're doing?
It's interesting because an ISV is a product-based company, and the services that you deliver alongside that product are a separate revenue stream and an accompanying revenue stream. So for me, I wanted to try something different. I wanted to actually be in a position where I could try and influence the roadmap in some way and specifically while I was at Financial Force, I was focusing on their PSA product.
Yeah.
Which is for professional services businesses. And having worked as a consultant, putting in timesheets, putting in expenses, planning projects, planning my resources and looking at utilization, you know, for me, that was something that I could relate to from my real life. And therefore, I wanted to kind of bring some of that real life experience into, you know, in and share some of those experiences with the product teams and with my colleagues and with my customers as well. So I really enjoyed working there from that perspective. The difference is that I think it's a very different model because you are selling a product. You know, and we see it all the time with Salesforce as well. There are excellent features that you want to share, and you use those as hooks to get your customer in. It's a sales, quite a sales-led organization.
Yeah.
And for me, I actually focus on the value. I really like to understand in depth. I mean, when I'm on a project, I get quite immersed in it. I will use language like, okay, so how are we going to deal with our claims process? And I don't work for that company, but
yeah.
I get immersed into it enough that I can, you know, and I get genuinely interested in how they work and how they operate, and therefore how to make Salesforce work as well as it can do for that organization. And Financial Force was a great mix of the product that you had to take out from the shelf and give to the customer and train the customer on it. But then on the other side of it was actually showing them how to bend it and how to make it work for them.
Mm.
And that's a lot of the reason I stayed there so long is to have that triangulated experience where you're feeding back from the customers back to the product team to say, oh, it'd be really good. The customers think it'd be really good if you could do X, Y, Z. And then I go back into the customers and say, well, you know, it's a great piece of feedback. I'll feed that back to the product team. In the meantime, let's look at how else we can make this happen for you. So it was a it was a really fascinating insight.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you actually, and I think you possibly already touched on some of these, but what if you could pick one project that you're most proud of, if there is such a, you know, such a project with regards to Salesforce, what would it be, and why are you so proud of it?
So I can say this because it's there's a press release out from a few years ago, but it's the UK's National Audit Office.
Okay.
We put in Financial Force, PSA and accounting, HCM and purchasing. And it was a suite of about four or five packages that went into Salesforce. And my role on that was to be the PSA specialist, but also that was the project where I realized that my role was changing and that I was acting as a solution architect, because my responsibility was in, yes, looking after my little area, which was the project and resource management side, but also integrating that with the accounting side for expenses and for revenue, for cost recognition, reducing the number of spreadsheets that HR teams had to work with by having the system create one, having a user create one worker record, and then having that trickle effect going into PSA to create the resource, going into accounting to set up the expenses account. You know, all stuff that would previously take about a week and about five manual processes would just happen as someone clicked save on a worker record. All that stuff would just happen. And I really got quite a kick out of delivering that kind of experience where it was just so much quicker. But it was a successful project, I think, as well, because it was a real partnership with the customer. The guys at the NAO are so smart. And they spent a lot of time really immersing themselves in what their users needed to do and understanding the challenges and what the benefits needed to be and how they were going to measure against those benefits. So when we got there, they were 100% ready. They knew exactly what they wanted us to do. And they made working with them a really collaborative and valuable experience. So for me, I love that project because of the collaboration that happened. It was some fantastic minds all spinning ideas off each other, but also it was that transition to an architect kind of role where I was considering everything, like the security, the volumes of data, the integrations, how we were going to govern the system after it went live and all of those things. So it was a real
brilliant,
great project.
And as you say, that was your first moment then when you realize you're now a solution architect, which must have been pretty cool, and that seems to overlap then with you becoming, are you the founder or one of the founders of Ladies Be Architects?
I am the founder.
What made you think of that?
I was working through my designer certifications and I hadn't done any certs for about 3 years. I've been struggling with health challenges, so I decided not to add any extra stress to my life at that time and just recover. And when I started at Blue Wolf, I had a great opportunity to do some certifications, and a great mentor as well. So we had a few conversations about possibly doing the CTA certification, at which point I just kind of laughed and went, no, that's something other people do.
Yeah.
And I said, but what I'll probably like to get is application architect. And it became, let's go and do, so I decided to start with some certifications that I knew would be easy pickings for me. So data architecture, sharing and visibility were the two main ones I wanted to do because I'd used them in my time as an admin. Skills that I needed to pass those exams were developed over those roles. So I tackled those first and then I offered some free vouchers. So I was like, oh, okay, I have to do platform developer one then, and maybe a couple of others. And I started to think, you know what, I'm actually really quite enjoying doing this. I'm really enjoying all the things that I'm learning. And I can feel that when I go in and see a new prospect or a new customer and they're wanting to sense check a solution, or my colleagues are asking me for help, through doing these certifications, it's given me things to think about while I'm having those conversations.
Yeah.
And things I can pass on to my colleagues, like, oh, you think you want a workflow rule? Well, what's going to happen? How's the data that is feeding that workflow rule? Where's it coming from? How is it kept secure? All of those things. And I could feel myself becoming a better Salesforce practitioner. So I decided to go and see if I could find any other architects that, I went and joined the community online and was scrolling through a lot of the comments. And at the time, all I could see was lots of comments from men. And I was like, where are all the girls? I can't be the only one.
Yeah. Can I ask, who was that mentor that you just referenced?
It was Andrew Hart.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if it was a lady, but, I know Andrew. Yeah, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So you decided, I mean, what, for people that don't know, and perhaps they probably won't know, Ladies Be Architects then, which is archladies.com. I'm just hovering on it now. What is that? Is it like just a community basically for you guys to help people or to help other ladies like yourself from 5 or 6 years ago to get these certifications? I'm saying it for you. Exactly, what is it?
No, it's actually for everybody. The reason that we have this now, and it's great, I mean, it started off as a where are all the girls, let's study together and help each other and let's get together every month and tackle a topic and ask questions and raise challenges and things like that. And then it became, actually, we shouldn't restrict this to ladies because a lot of men liked what we were doing. We were producing some content and it was helping lots of people. So we said, well, actually, this is a bit more than that. This is helping everybody. It just happens to be led by women. And on that side, the purpose of having it led by women, I mean, that's our number one rule, really, is that if we're going to run sessions, they have to be led by women, is really so sure. Because as women, we're quite good at talking ourselves out of doing things. But if we do see other women doing something and we see them taking a lead and getting up and doing things and being and having courage in them and belief in themselves, then actually that encourages other women to do it too.
When you say talking yourself out of things, is that certainly in this space, a lot of really good people I know, including yourself, have this thing that you can refer to as imposter syndrome. Do you mean that it's almost like you said earlier on with the CTA thing, oh, that's something other people do? Do you still have that little bit of niggling doubt about yourself, if you know what I mean? Which maybe not a bad thing, it drives you on possibly. Is that fair or have you overcome that now?
I think that's a great question, actually, because if you'd asked me that 4 weeks ago, then I would have said there have been lots of times when I feel like I shouldn't be, you know, I'll give you an example. I was doing a mock CTA exam, and when I got in there, I saw three men who I know very well and are good friends, and one man who I didn't know very well, but we're at the same level. Professionally, and when I walked in there, all I saw was these three men who were a little bit older than me, and I thought I shouldn't be in this room. Who the hell is this girl that she knows about all these systems? You know, she's been on the planet 5 minutes, she's been working in IT for 10 minutes. You know, that doesn't make sense, but so. I did kind of freak out a little bit because I was like, I shouldn't be here. Why am I here? Like, this is ridiculous. How did I get here? And all three of these gentlemen encouraged me and said, Gemma, you are supposed to be here. This is your place at the table. You have every right to be here. And back then I was just like, yeah, you're just being nice. And then last week when I got into my CTA exam,
last week,
I went through that whole procedure, and it wasn't a mock, it was the real thing. I realized that I did deserve to be there and that I am capable of doing this, and that all that other stuff that was haunting my thoughts just needed to go away. But I had to go through that process to really understand it, because the mocks are meant to be really hard. Because, you know, how else are you going to be prepared? So now I feel like I deserve it. And
absolutely. I mean, there'll be people listening to this that will look at your profile on LinkedIn, listen to what you're saying, and think that, you know, what you're saying is crazy. You're clearly amazing at what you do. But again, it's a common trait that I see with really good people. But, you know, and you even feel it yourself, don't you? Sometimes you get to a certain age and all these years of experience, but you still sometimes just feel like you're just winging it. Or maybe that's just me. that's pretty impressive. Do you know yet what the result is? How long does it take if it's been a week?
It takes a couple of weeks, so I don't know yet.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Nice period where I don't know at the moment. So
that's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. But I have friends who've done it with me, so we're texting each other most days, like, have you heard yet? Or, you know, oh, I still keep. And the worst thing is, like, leaving that room is your brain starts whirring and thinking about all the things that you think.
What you should have said and done. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Well, look, I don't know how it works. I mean, worst case scenario, how quickly can you do it again? Or is it something
wait,
like that?
board to come back. So, you know, looking at the timetable, I think it's in the later part of this year. So if I have to stop for a month or so and get back on the horse a bit later on in the year, then so be it. You know, it takes as long as it takes.
Well, when this goes out, hopefully by the time it goes out, you'll know, and I can put a little follow-up message in there for everyone to let them know that it went well. Yes, fingers crossed. I'm wary of taking up far too much of your time. So I've got, a little thing to wrap up on, I reckon, for people listening. They might be keen to know if you had one sort of piece of advice you could give somebody that perhaps is that person like you at Dun & Bradstreet. Did they just fall into a sales force role or something, or they are looking to get into it? Either way, what would the advice, if you had any advice, what would it be for somebody looking to sort of start their career in Salesforce? And I appreciate I've sprung that on you, so you're not prepared for that, but do you have any sort of tips or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, it's different now to what it was when I first began, but there are quite a few different roles out there for you to get into, and it's okay if it's perfectly okay, and in fact, you know, I think it's a great thing if you want to continue in that role of looking after your Salesforce org for your company, because you are effectively going to be in charge of it, and therefore you'll get to know so much more about your own business. As each department wants to come and play in Salesforce, you'll get to learn more about the different business processes that take place. If you want to go consulting, the trade-off is that you'll have to travel. Many roles, which involves taking time away from your family potentially, but the other side of that is you'll get to work across a myriad of different industries. And if you like one particular industry, why not specialize in that industry? If you like banking, there's plenty of banks who have long-term engagements with Salesforce now that you can get involved in. Similarly, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to develop something that no one's ever developed before and take to market, there's such an amazing opportunity with organizations like there's supportive organizations like Rad Women Code, who can help you learn to code.
Rad, I might get you to send me some of these authors and I can post them. Rad Women Code.
Women in Tech Developers Group also are entrepreneurs themselves, so they encourage any women who want to perhaps take on something different, build their own app exchange package. You can apply for funding through Salesforce Ventures, which runs every year at Dreamforce. They have a Dragon's Den style pitch, I think it's called Dream Pitch, where you can take your idea to a panel of investors, and then, you know, you might get some money towards your venture. So there's so many different things that you can do. And then there's other things that you can grow into over the years as well. And I would think about what you value as a person. I personally value learning. So I like being in consulting, because from every single engagement I have, I learn from. I also like being an architect, because I'm now in an advisory role, so I'm learning different skill set to what I had 10 years ago, where I was literally working pure technology. Now I'm actually trying to help other people grow. And I discovered I had skills I didn't know that I had. I discovered that I enjoyed those things more than I thought I would. And I think the biggest advice I can give is that you can't guarantee that what you want right now is going to be the same as what you want in 5 years' time. So if I'm in an interview and someone says, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?" I actually have been known to turn it on its head and go, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?"
Yeah.
Because personally, I think that's not really a fair question to ask.
Well, if you'd have asked you know, 10 years ago, where do you see yourself? You know, I'm guessing, putting words in your mouth, that you probably would never have thought that you'd be where you are now, would you? You're back in the Access Point days or Dun & Bradstreet days.
I just wanted to work with Salesforce. That's been the constant for me. I've stayed with Salesforce. I plan to stay with Salesforce. You know, my role might change while I'm working with Salesforce Technologies. Right now, I am quite. I've got other priorities. I've got a child to grow and develop and keep out.
How old's your little one now?
She's 7. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It goes a bit fast, doesn't it? So now I've managed to keep it alive. I've got to keep it out of jail.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So that and that's always an interesting thing, isn't it, with careers in, like you said, about consulting and traveling. So you obviously you're still working for a consultancy, but that's, how do you manage to juggle that?
I have a really good support network around me, and we all help each other. So when they need me to cover, I'll cover, and then when I need them to cover, they'll cover me. So that's sure. how I work it out. And actually, this time I'm taking my daughter to Trailhead DX.
Really?
Yeah, and she's going to be handing out stickers and raffle tickets and just trying to understand a bit more of Mummy's world a little bit. And that helps me because I'm trying to show her that if she's got something she enjoys and wants to do in her future, that it's okay to, there's a reason why she has to go to school every day. She needs to be educated so that she can decide, she can make a more informed decision. And I'm trying to lead by example in that regard. So she knows that also, because I've historically been the breadwinner as well in my family, she knows that if Mummy has to go away and work, it's so that we can afford to live in the house and eat food and, you know, have toys and presents at Christmas. So yeah. She's starting to understand that much better now.
Unbelievable. So and will she be encouraged to do some coding? I'm already seeing a spin-off of maybe babies be architects or something like that. That would be
architects. Yeah, that'd be funny. She's actually on about she wants to learn to code, so I'm going to get her a scratchbook and see how she gets on. She loves IT. She loves Minecraft.
See, I'm too old. I've heard of it. I don't know what that is, but yeah.
The good thing is she, my cousin, he's 11. He likes setting things on fire in Minecraft. Thankfully, she's not reached that yet.
Brilliant. Oh, God. Well, fantastic. So she sees you on stage doing your awesomeness and probably is really impressed or you know, just thinks that's the norm, I suppose.
I think she has said before, I want to do what you do, Mummy. And I'm like, well, you know, we'll get you in for your certs next week.
Absolutely. Why not?
It's a joke.
That's amazing, isn't it? Well, brilliant. What a great answer to the first time I've asked that question. I can't imagine I'm going to get many better answers than that. And is there anything right now you're really excited about? I mean, it sounds like you're excited about everything to do with Salesforce, but is there anything else that you think people need to hear about before we say goodbye?
I'm at the moment, I'm just all systems go for World Tour London.
Oh, God, next week. Yeah, of course.
So I've been doing my slides today, getting ready for my talk about customer readiness, about whether you're really truly ready for your project and whether and how you're thinking about your scope and your implementation success. So we're doing a talk about that, and then I'm incredibly excited that this year at TDX Trailhead DX in San Francisco.
Gemma, sorry, can you say that last bit again? You just broke up. What you said, you're incredibly excited about. Sorry, what?
I'm incredibly excited about Trailhead DX because for the first year ever, there's an architect track.
Ooh, okay.
So architects are being recognised as a completely different role that cuts across admin and dev.
Right,
And it's so exciting to have been part of influencing that and working actively with Salesforce in the architect zones and helping them out this year. So I'm really, really excited about that.
So thank you, Gemma, and yeah, hopefully I'll see you next week. But in the meantime, thanks ever so much for being a guest on our podcast. And thanks to all of you guys for listening. There'll be some more interviews with the Salesforce industry experts, just like Gemma, in future episodes. So I think to make sure you don't miss out on those, you can subscribe so that they pop up and remind you as they come up. You can also like and share this on social media. That would be much appreciated. And if you have any particular comments or more questions, then you can also leave a review, or failing that, I'm quite findable on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with me and fire me some questions on that, and I'm sure Jim will be open to that too. Thanks again guys, and keep your eyes open for the next podcast.